This podcast is a recording of the discussion at a meeting held at the Dublin Anarchist Book Fair on the 3rd of March on the topic of what sort of Ireland do we want. You can listen to the speeches that people are reacting to at www.wsm.ie.
By the way, I'll let you come back at the end of the discussion as well.
Okay.
You don't have to answer everything now.
Yeah. Step over here and argue, whatever the question, whether we have an army or not, it's a ridiculous question. But for want of a long answer, we don't. But not that you believe me if I say it. Not that you believe me either way. Maybe. But very importantly, I appreciate you're coming from a Republican background. I was involved in the Republican movement as it's known since I was 17, all my adult life until very recently. I appreciate very, very, very fully what you're saying about the grip and the type of organisation that is there. For one, of shorthand, our organisation, I don't believe that it follows that there's something inherently flawed with a socialist Republican, left Republican philosophy that leads to that. Okay, that argument is being made about the socialist and communist philosophy in the world, that somehow inherently within it there's a tendency towards power and power corrupting. You make a point about power corrupting and corrupting, absolutely. George Bernard Shaw once spoke about that very quote, that very idea. He said it wasn't that power corrupted, absolutely. He said that fools who got into positions of power corrupted power. Okay, but to think that power isn't a factor, either in a personal sense, a social sense, a political sense, with the greatest respect, I think we'll probably always be waiting for that utopia. Okay, the anarchist utopia, and it is, if I may say, a beautiful thing. I was well read in anarchism, in anarchist music, in anti-fascist politics, again, when I was a very young teenager. All of my subsequent politics, if I may say so, has come from that. The question is, and all of us sort of share it, is how do we get to that beautiful idea? And it has, to my mind, there has to be a degree of organisation to that. So just very briefly to answer your point, coming from an organisation that, on paper, had very democratic structures, but I mean, I certainly haven't spoken publicly about the Republican movement and my involvement with it, but I'm not going to lie to you, my experience of it is that it's very, very, very much the antithesis of democratic. What you will see today and last night at the Sinn Féin Ardèche is, to use the term Orwellian, is actually to downplay, and I mean that. And I have some very good comrades in that movement, I really do. Okay, so we move away from that. In terms of irony and somehow that we are destined, we're only a young organisation. We have certainly spent all of our waking hours trying to correct some of them contradictions. I'll give you just one example of that, if I may. We have the equivalent, with our relatively small numbers, of an Ardèche today. We have it once a month. The form of that will change to reflect its function and size and so on. Down outside the city today, 70, 80 people are meeting there. To reflect their desire not to fall into them sort of loopholes. On major strategic decisions and so on and so forth, some will find this very naive, and maybe it is, and maybe you'll have to change to reflect that. Any one person in a room of this size, or twice or three times the size, can object to a proposal, and the proposal falls. Not that it falls forever, but it falls and has to go to arbitration. So in terms of then democracy and control and empowerment, we are very, very, very minded of trying to redress that. Many of us come from a movement where that doesn't exist in Disney, didn't exist. Can you build a revolution on that type of vanguardism? You cannot, you will not, you are destined to fail. Our philosophy, again, we are trying to reflect the fact that it won't be us who will give the answers to people, I can assure you. It won't be us, it won't be me. I ain't very reluctant to be sitting in the seat, I can assure you. I'd rather be at home, be wife, and someone else talking and giving these answers. To be very honest, I'm reluctantly here to do that. I feel compelled to do it. We're trying to correct some of the errors that I don't believe are inherent in Republican or Socialist Republican organisations, but they have seemed to be a very, very, very consistent feature of it. So in terms of that, I don't know if that addresses. I would agree to disagree that somehow any organised movement that uses power is destined to fail. I would think it's essential. Anything outside of that type of organisation is itself probably destined to fail. No matter how beautiful that idea is, I probably won't get a chance to go back and do it once, but
we'll give you time at the end. What I'm going to propose we do is that we try and about 2:15 give the three speakers 2 or 3 minutes each to wrap it up, and then we'll be out here by 2:25 for the next meeting. Is that okay with everybody? That means I've 6 names on the list, so that, and 12 minutes, so 2 minutes each roughly. And if anybody else wants to speak, you'll be getting less than 2 minutes. Mark, you're next.
Well, it's just where I talk really fast, but generally means nobody understands things, so I'm trying to squeeze it in. I think, like, a point Clinton made about electoral democracy, I mean, right across Western Europe at the minute, it's fallen its own sword. The amount of people that are actually turned out to elections, just by the pure disillusionment, you know, that sort of electoral democracy is kind of failing at so many different levels. I think libertarian ways of organising actually lend itself most meaningful to actually pulling people back into a political process for participation. One of the biggest things that we probably have a difficulty with right here and now is it isn't what we do whenever we have a revolution in Ireland and we're standing alone. It's what we do right here and now with feasibility issues. It's like if somebody's working and trying to pay off their mortgage, you've got to feed kids, all the rest of it. Like, if you're having a discussion of that, our solution is that we need to have like a social revolution. People don't have a connection to that at all. I believe it needs to happen, but I think like we need to look at how do we address education and various different things. And I think how libertarians are working, particularly in campaigns at the minute, that the working practices themselves create space for creativity for people to sort of get involved. I think that's what we're going to have to go forward with.
Thanks.
Just actually on the issue of elections again. Maybe also I do think it's really important in this sense because it is the big difference, I think, between the Irish movement and probably other trends like the real thing, the direct action and stuff like that. But I think it's important to note for anarchists it's not a philosophical thing that we want to be the purest of the pure and go we don't in any way want to engage with a dirty system. It's a fundamental belief that campaigns get messed up by it and like on a day-to-day basis it has a negative effect. I think the best way that comes out is in clientelism. An election is the ultimate time of clientelism where you go to someone going, put your faith in me and I'll do it for you. And you can see it in campaigns, but I can see it in Rossport at the moment. That's sort of it's an incredibly difficult, the state is really putting the boot in. And people want it. Someone would stand in an election going, I am the Rossport candidate and I can deliver this. People want some golden horse now. But what we have to argue with people is going, there is none. You're the only one. But I do think when things get tough, people want to have this belief that there's something that, because all their lives they've been told that there's someone that will sort it. And I do think elections do that. They do reinforce this thing of going, it can be sorted by another. You don't really have to do a lot. Just go down and vote for me. And I just think it is important for people to know that from an anarchist perspective, it's not that we just want to be the ones that are pure. It's a very tactical and practical thing that we believe it's a bad idea to do it. And just on organisations that you kind of touched on it, that like we're as in favour of his organisation, as the next person, the only problem we have is with hierarchical organisation and with our authority that's unjustified and unquestionable. And that, like, what I do is just want to put out there that we're totally in favour of organisation and the more the better, but that's from my perspective.
Jason.
Yeah, that's one bit from the floor earlier
said
a lot of people have fought in bed to get the vote. A lot of people have fought and paid to get a lot of things that, you know, anarchists aren't going to be particularly happy about, you know. The vote's maybe not as controversial as some of the other things that people have fought and paid for. One more thing to say, sort of addressing this there, Ege, the anti-imperialist position, and it comes up, it came across in your talk, actually, it runs into some sort of bother in terms of the fact that it's not just the British state in Ireland. There's a number of people in the North East Ireland that to some extent regard themselves as British. And I found it interesting when you said that people of Belfast, Brixton and Birmingham weren't your element. So it sort of, you did sort of shift them into another camp when you did that, I think. But for me, anarchism is about class unity. It's not about creating some sort of 32 county state. It's about building class unity. I think it has to be international and it has to be based on the issues that affect working class people day in and day out. And you did acknowledge the global nature of capitalism. I'm sort of wondering why, given the politics that you outlined today, it took till April last year for a meeting to split from Sinn Féin.
I may or may not choose to address that, but there is an answer.
Okay, that's it. That's me. Sure.
Cheers.
Yeah, no, the question I was going to ask was actually answered by Dali. I've been involved in Shad City, so I was involved with several members of IRB when they were in Sinn Féin, built up quite a good relationship. Well, I was actually going to ask a question of kind of internal structure, but you answered that. It's a good answer. So
okay.
The relationship.
Andreas.
Yeah, no, I mean, just the thing Dan was saying about the kind of political structures of the socialist society, or whatever kind of society you're going to call it, about the need for checks and balances, and one of these will be a separation of powers. I've said this just after sort of saying that the Paris Commune was one of the sort of models for work by. But the Paris Commune, one of the things it did was abolish the separation of powers. And I think, this might be controversial, I think the Paris Commune was right and Dan's wrong. I think the separation of powers is not a check and balance. It's actually one of the abuses you need to get rid of. Because the only way you can have a separation of powers is by having the legal sphere and the political sphere appointed in different ways. I mean, the way it is at the moment is the politicians are elected at elections once every 5 years, the judges are appointed by the government. That's how you have a separation of powers. If you have, for instance, what the Paris Commune brought in, that judges are elected, same way as political delegates are elected, then generally the political makeup will be much the same in both, so you don't have a political sphere separate to a legal sphere, the two get mixed together. And I think that's the way it should be, because the only way you can avoid that is by having, in some sense, a different, a more restricted electorate, which chooses who's going to run the legal system. And then it doesn't become a check and balance, it becomes a recipe for making things worse than they are. But I do think the point of checks and balances is something we need to address. I mean, the traditional answer of sort of saying we won't go into the details of what society would be like because it won't be up to us is a bit of a cop-out, and I don't think it convinces people. But I think it kind of starts now, building into the fact that the kind of political consciousness we're trying to develop amongst people involves not just changes in the political system and the economic system, but also changes the way people think and the way people respect other points of view and genuine differences. And that's something which, I know it sounds a bit wishy-washy, but it's just as important. It's just as much as part of any revolutionary change as socialising means of production or whatever. And getting that in, the built it into consciousness means that when revolutionary change takes place, that's one of the things that's in it. And the lessons of where things have gone wrong in the past is something that what is one of the moral factors along with all the other things, isn't it? I don't know if there's any kind of specific structural recipe that you can do to embody that in the structure of society, but I think kind of keeping the separation of powers and having the legal sphere separate from the actual implementation of political decision making is keeping things bad rather than solving the problems.
Thanks. James?
Well, I dearly wish I could say I'm a smart salute, but I did have been sticker than I didn't. I'm not going to appear to be the character complaint for the here. So people have illusions of various things. And the point I was going to ask was actually for a comment on IRE, because I'm a former member of St. Louis. And it was wrong, you addressed the question to that extent. Already it's about the inherent authoritarianism of the Republican movement and the anti-democratic nature, which we both experienced. And I'm very interested to see that you're trying to address that issue. I'm very interested to see how that will develop within IRE. I think it's I welcome the emergence of IRE. I take on board here some questions that you have. But I mean, that question will be asked of every member of the panel in German history at any point. When does the penny drop? It's good that the rival political organisations that obviously are represented, the ISN and IRB, actually represent very good, very progressive organisations. And I think it's a very healthy development on the left. And I think it's a move away from the old style, the authoritarian left. I think that's what's happening in a general sense. And I think that the debate between our organisations is actually having a very commonly and friendly fashion, which is quite an interesting thing in itself, if you look back the last 20 years of left activism in Ireland. I think that's all the positive. The question I'm going to ask is about Ireland, is obviously addressed. So. No more.
Yeah, this is just yet another response to Vincent's point about voting. Vincent would, if people can handle another response to that from an anarchist perspective, I don't know what
these are hardly unexpected.
But
we're pissing on your idea.
Vincent was making reference to the popular consciousness and the legitimacy that, you know, the state and quote-unquote democracy and what have you still have in the popular consciousness and amongst working class people and what have you. And I'd just like to come back on that, because I think the popular consciousness and the popular consciousness of the working class, whatever the working class is, I think it is a very very funny and very complex thing with a lot of different layers. And I wouldn't deny that there's still a large element within that funny mess of different outlooks. I wouldn't deny there's still an element there of, you know, legitimacy. People give legitimacy to the state. But I think it's important to acknowledge that there's a massive part of the popular consciousness, for want of a better term, that regards politicians as like a joke, people with no credibility. I'm thinking of lots of things, but I'm thinking of like those stupid polls you get in newspapers about what professions people discuss and stuff, and usually at the top of them, like you know, personal injury lawyers and insurance people, and then politicians usually at the top. And like anarchists aren't the only people who aren't really into voting. You know, there's actually a massive proportion of the electorate or potential electorate who never vote, and a lot of those people are in quote unquote working class areas. And a lot of the time when the state has hung out working class areas to dry, like when the heroin crisis was going on in Dublin in the 80s and 90s, because they knew they could do that because people in those areas didn't vote, you know, so obviously you could say that they should be voting. But I think as well it's important to remember that a lot of the time when revolutionaries, we might not be in a revolutionary situation now like Simpson points out, but a lot of the time in history when revolutionary situations have emerged, it's specifically because, or a major part of that was the structures of power being delegitimized in the popular consciousness, and people no longer taken seriously. And I'm not just talking about parliamentary democracy now, you can extend this to the petty kingships and all the different types of states and everything. They lost legitimacy, and that's when revolutions happened. So I think we should actually run with that and talk a lot more about corruption and take the piss out of politicians and the state and elections a lot more.
Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to give each of the speakers 3 minutes. You're not expected to answer all the points that were raised. What I might suggest that, I mean, I think there were 3 very good talks, and that if they were put up as on a thread on Indie Media or something like that, that a continuation of this discussion online would be probably healthy, you know. So, who wants to go first?
Yeah.
Okay, Dan.
Let's rattle through it very quickly. Just to address Andreas's point, I think you might misunderstand what I was talking about. I said about the separation of politics from the legal sphere. I'm not talking about a legal system that's totally separate from the democratic sphere. I think judges should be elected, for example. But I do think you need to have checks and balances, that the problem of how you defend minority rights against the majority isn't going to disappear under socialism. It's going to be there, probably for good. And you need to have some kind of system that can make allowances for that. I think electoralism has been the main point of discussion. As far as the historical point is concerned, I think it's important to stress that the Social Democrats, certainly, and eventually the big communist parties in Western Europe, all put forward the idea that you can use the ballot box to take control of the existing state and then use that as a tool for socialism. And that is certainly not what we argue in the ISN. I know in a few months' time we'll all be out there canvassing for John O'Neill, our candidate. We won't say to a single person, John is going to get into the Dáil and then he's going to do all these wonderful things for you. We're going to say to people, John will try his best to use that platform, if he gets elected, to promote struggle. And we will point to the example of Joe Higgins, although we have a big difference with the Socialist Party on many issues. I think Joe Higgins has done a fairly good job. We point to the example of the Gamma strike, for example, where the main cause of that victory was the mobilisation of Gamma workers themselves. That was the main substance of it. But it did help that struggle, the fact that Joe Higgins was able to use his platform in the Dáil and in the media to draw attention to that struggle. As far as the evolution of the Republican movement is concerned, I think it's a special question there, because the reason why Sinn Féin traditionally didn't take seats in Leinster House, it wasn't because they rejected capitalist democracy in general, it was because they believed Leinster House was a puppet assembly of British imperialism, and the IRA Army Council was actually the legitimate government of Ireland. So when they flipped from that position after they dropped the pensioners in the mid-80s to a kind of a classical social democratic position, which has led them to where they are now. As far as the Shell City campaign is concerned, I mean, in the OSN, we would be saying to people in Rossport, don't rely on getting Mark Garvin or anyone elected. That's not going to solve your problems. You already have Jerry Cowley in there, and Cowley may have backed off in supporting direct action, but there's people like Joe Higgins and Shane Sealy who will support direct action. But it's not going to make any kind of deal. If Garvin gets elected, he's not going to be able to cut a Gregory deal with Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael that will lead to Shell going to sea because it's far too important for them. We would tell people, put your faith in the campaign there, and electoral politics isn't going to save you. So that's about that.
Danny?
Okay, just to very try and sort of tie a few together briefly. I wasn't going to address it, but James brought it up as well about the penny dropping with people in Oregon and wherever. And it seems to be a consistent thing of people. It's almost like they can't take it on face value for what you say, but maybe that's acceptable coming from the type of organisation that we have, many of us have come from. Okay, that maybe you need to ask the question a number of times before you accept the answer. But however, to answer it, there's not one person, hand on heart, I'd be open, none of this stuff has been discussed publicly, and that's something to do with the discipline of the Republican movement, for whatever that means to people, that type of discipline. I consistently, since the ceasefire, not that I'm a diehard militarist, in fact, in terms of weapons and subsequent debates, I argued years before that actually gestures should have been made with weapons, for different reasons. I'm certainly not a militarist, but I did argue in 1994 that we would end up, the Republican movement would end up where it has ended up 13 years later. That, you can take that or you can leave that. So the penny dropped for me a long time ago. Why I wasted my whole adult life in affecting that movement is a moot point. I don't believe I wasted it. Some people would argue why. Why did it take you until 2006? There are lots of reasons for that I won't get in, but it's something to do with loyalty, something to do with trying to use the biggest vehicle that you see there, and so on and so forth. Take that or leave that, if you want. In terms of a slightly related, well, very much related point, tangentially so, in this case, is Finn addressed it to both of us, in terms of the non-ISM speakers, in terms of electoralism. Very much the negative consequences of electoral politics and engagement with the neoliberal democracy are very much the product that you're seeing today with the Sinn Féin Republican movement. Okay, that's not to deny the importance of electoral politics. You have Higgins, the example we just had here. Seamus Costello in the 1970s was a very good reflection of that again, his quote about councils and parliaments being places for propaganda to mobilise and rally people. Are they the place where social revolution, transformation will happen? In fact, they won't. An organisation that puts its effort and its energy into that fallacy is doomed to failure. Again, not to refer to other organisations, but we see organisations that had a revolutionary potential, in inverted commas and in a cliché format, definitely, because they never fleshed it out, but a revolutionary potential. Very brief, but I think it's important, as your question about the people of Belfast and so on. It's a very long and difficult discussion, absolutely. I would say a people who, whatever, a person has a right to be British, see themselves as British, or as one man said one time to a DUP man, if you want to think you're a Martian with the greatest respect, you have a right to think you're a Martian. No one's taken that right away from you. An ideology backed up by armed force that divides the working class, that's a very different thing. That's a very, very, very different thing. If you have an organised group of racists in this city, the fact that they come from a community, the fact that they come from a subservient community, and that's what racist people are, they're made into that. Is anyone here arguing that you wouldn't face them then? Because you might disillusion or make embittered the community that they come from, that somehow have an affinity with? I don't think so. Okay, so I think we need to get real about some of these things. I don't have a problem for Protestant people. I have more of a problem, to be very honest, for Catholic people, because I know them better. To be very honest, they don't believe in a God, they don't believe in this nonsense. That's a product of imperialism, as far as I'm concerned. I would agree to disagree with you, but we could have the discussion. I think we would be probably a little bit more commonality in terms of what we see as the eventual goal. It's how you get there we probably have problems with. And the most important point that none of us have really addressed, I think, is this man's point. And it comes to electoralism as well. What does socialism mean for me if I want to buy a house? What does it mean if I having the money to fucking pay for the groceries that I need, my kids and so on and so forth? I'm a teacher. This building here, they won't even open the gates to let me in. I'm a member of this union. Okay? I'm a teacher. I live in a little dog box of a house. Will I ever be able to afford it? I won't. won't be able to afford them in this system, under this system. Whatever about 1 or 2% tax hikes or reductions, it won't happen. It has to be fundamentally changed. Do I have the answer to it? I don't. But I do believe under a socialist system, the resources are there, the intelligence is there, the energy is there. Maybe, in deference to the anarchist position, the inherent capability is there in people. Do I have the answers to it? No, but I definitely believe it's possible in that regard. And that's what it must mean. People have a roof and they don't need to worry about a roof or food. If it doesn't mean that, well, it means nothing.
Thanks. Yes.
All right, well, I'm worrying about food at the moment. there's been a lot of discussion. There's been a lot of discussion about the failures of social democracy today, in the last 2 hours, and and how we're all more radical than the social democrats. You know, make the same mistake that the social democrats made. And although, of course, I agree with what's actually being said there, I think when you look at the words, that's a real shame. That the way we use the term social democracy is to label people that have no interest in making society democratic. You know, I mean, like, I think the fundamental difference between anarchists and social democrats and many socialists is that we're social democrats. We want a democratic society. We don't want society run more tightly by a democratic parliament. We don't want the economy run more democratically. We want society, you know, we want how things are produced, how things are distributed, how we live our lives, how we interact with one another. Everything to be democratic, you know, a democratic society. And I think when you start talking about a democratic society and you start looking at it socially, and not from a political point of view, not from an economic point of view, but from how we actually live our lives, you know, you come to a number of problems that kind of have arisen in the discussion. You get a different angle on them. Like the question, what would happen if there was a revolution in Ireland and there wasn't a revolution in Britain? Well, if we're talking about the working class of Ireland having a revolution, the working class in Ireland can't achieve socialism in Ireland. No, it can't achieve communism in Ireland anyway, without there being a revolution in other countries. It can make great progress. You can have a much better society in Ireland and Britain not having change. But if we're talking about social change, we're talking about social change. And social change in society extends beyond the borders of some country. And it extends beyond the borders of Europe, you know. Society is integrated. And although, of course, I'm not saying that, you know, one moment every single person in the world and all of the world society will just click and change. But I don't think you can isolate political change from economic change, from change in Ireland, from change in Britain. And an anarchist talk about social change, we're looking towards a section of society. Those of us who don't have control of society, you know, the working class, the proletariat, whatever name you want to put on it, those of us who don't have control over society, don't have control over the means of production, don't have control over our lives, that this section of society, that we, you know, assert ourselves socially and over society and take control over our own lives, that means taking control over our own society and making it more democratic. And when you try and put elections in there, and the question of electoralism, it's difficult to work out how that makes sense. I mean, where does voting for somebody enter into the question of working class self-empowerment? For me, it doesn't enter into the equation. You're doing something different. If the question is building a social movement that's capable of transforming society, you know, that is empowering, that is democratic, then we should no more be aspiring to elect politicians than we should be aspiring to elect bank managers, you know, or being aspiring to elect a landlord. It doesn't change things, you know. For us as anarchists, the question is not a political change, not an economic change, it's a fundamental societal change, where we get the control of society and where we abolish the system whereby some people have control of society and then the vast majority of us don't, or, you know, to abolish class society, essentially.
Thanks, Osh. I just want to thank everybody. I everybody here got triggered. It was very easy making the chair because all the contributions are given in very fraternal and friendly fashion. And somebody did make the point that it's great to see different political organisations and currents who may have disagreements on a lot of stuff and agree on some stuff, actually be able to sit down and talk stuff out, because if any of us believe we have all the answers, then we're fooling ourselves. So it's only by discussing ideas with people we disagree with as well as agree with that we'll eventually get to point we're aiming to be. So I just want to thank everyone for the contributions. I do hope that the three talks can be put available on the web, actually, because I think that
this podcast is a recording of the discussion at a meeting held at the Dublin Anarchist Book Fair on the 3rd of March on the topic of what sort of Ireland do we want. You can listen to the speeches that people are reacting to at www.wsm.ie. This is a podcast from the Workers' Solidarity Movement. You'll find our webpage at www.wsm.ie.